Hey guys, it's me, Chris Denson from Innovation Crush. Now look, around here, we're not exactly web designers. I think you know that by now. But I'm in the process of creating an amazing website using Weebly. And honestly, I still can't believe how easy Weebly makes it. First of all, Weebly was created for people just like me with the courage to start their own business and the dream to be their own boss. You don't have to be a web designer or know how to code to build a beautiful blog or online store. And we were all very impressed with the wide variety of professionally designed mobile-friendly themes to choose from. Then you simply drag and drop to quickly build and publish your site. Too easy. And you can truly customize, update, and change your site anytime you want on any device. Join the over 30 million people who are already dreaming big with Weebly. Get started today for free at Weebly.com/crush. That's Weebly.com/crush. Weebly.com/crush. All right, everybody. Welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm seeing a different side of you.
I'm a performer of sorts.
This is a different side.
Right. This is an episode of Innovation Crush. I am your gracious host, Chris Denson. Today, the voice you just heard is none other than Troy Carter. Say hello, Troy.
Hello, people. Hanging out with my boy, Chris, today.
I love surprising people with, you know, My special talents.
This is long overdue. We've been trying to do this for a while.
I know, so right?
Happy to be here.
Here we go. Philly meets Detroit.
Yes, sir.
So for starters, for those who may not know, kind of give us the 101, the 90-second version of who Troy Carter is.
90-second version, Troy Carter, hustler from West Philly, West Philadelphia, born and raised, came up from Philly with Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince and those guys, went to work for Diddy for a while. So roots in Philly, New York, and then finally made my way out here to LA.
How long have you been in LA now?
13 years now.
All right. There you go.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't even know where to start with you because there's just so many sides to a Troy Carter. Let's start with the definition of Atom Factory. What is an Atom Factory?
The whole idea around Atom Factory, you know, I sold my management company in 2004, and I stayed on with the company I sold it to for a couple of years. And when I left, I didn't want to do anything that I had done before. And I worked for I sold my company to this huge conglomerate, and I hated it. It was miserable. So the whole idea was,
what didn't you like about that experience?
You know, it was a culture clash. You know, for us, you know, we had this really cool boutique talent management company, in downtown Philly, me and one of my best friends. And here we sold it. It was seven of us, like with me, my partner, our employees, it was only seven of us. And we sold it to a company with like 650 employees, publicly traded company, 35 direct reports, you know, so it was
culture clash.
It was a culture clash, totally different from everything that I knew about the entertainment business. So when I got out of my deal with them after I sold the company, I wanted to do something small, but yet powerful. And an Atom, you know, small but powerful, it just kind of stood out to me. So I just I decided to go with Atom Factory.
That's a great story and great branding, you know. Kind of like, it's interesting that you tapped into an experience and the thing that you feel most, so rather than what's a clever name.
I'd gone through like a couple of variations of the name, and it felt right. You know, certain things just feel right.
Now, out of all this experience, now I will get into like what exactly you did along the way working for Diddy and doing the management thing. And even now what you're doing on the VC side of things. Mm-hmm. Have you identified what the Troy Carter superpower is? Like, what's the one thing that, you know, you feel is your skill and yours alone?
You know what? I would say listening to people. I'm a really good empathizer. So really kind of, and I think viewing business and relationships and opportunity through empathy is very helpful. And definitely with managing artists and also working with startup founders as well. So it's been helpful.
So the empathy piece of it is interesting because I think That means a lot of division of Troy, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, knowing what a customer is going to like, and if it's a Warby Parker, for instance, mm-hmm. which is one of your portfolio companies,
yes. right?
Or, you know, a Megan Trainor, like it's just a lot of different, you know, parts of things that go into empathy. What are some of those key things that you look out for and like you want to see or receive in an exchange when you come across?
You know what? I think it, you know, as we look at business opportunities, it's first and foremost, you know, I'm a consumer on that side. So you're looking at would I listen to this, or would I understand why people would want to listen to this? You know, would I buy this, or would I understand why people would want to buy this? So that's kind of like, you know, I didn't go to business school or anything like that. So my analytics is just through, common sense,
right?
You know,
right, right.
I can listen to an idea and break the idea down in its simplest form and the most simple childlike questions that come along with it.
Right.
So, you know, so that's how I need the information broken down so I can understand it. And then from there, it's like, okay, I want to write a check or not?
Let me break something down for you then. No, I mean, that's even that, like, I love the fact that there's a simplicity to your process, mm-hmm. you know, and if I read correctly in some of your background, you did not finish high school.
No.
Okay. So
I got a GED.
There you go.
Yeah.
Shout out to all my GED people. See, you can too. you can make it. No, but I guess, do you feel that there's an advantage, you know, in some respects by not having had that staid background where somebody else, you know, maybe at your level of success, sees the world through a different lens because they have that MBA or the Wharton degree or whatever it might be?
You know, I think it's some advantages and it's some disadvantages, you know? So I think ultimately for me, it just personally boils down to, I never had a plan B. So when you don't have a plan B, you work a little harder, you stay a lot longer. You're willing to work through problems. You're willing to work through failures. You're willing to make certain sacrifices because, you know, I didn't have the luxury of being able to call, you know, my grandfather's contact, or, you know, a guy who I went to camp with, or boarding school with, you know, so I didn't have those right. sort of right. luxuries. So, so it was a lot of instinctual hustle to make things happen. With that though, you get advantages because you know, you put in the hours and you work harder.
Right.
But there's also disadvantages as well. You know, some disadvantages, you know, it's a lot of stuff I had to go back and learn, you know, a lot of stuff that, and even in terms of polish and how to work in a boardroom and, you know, all right. of those things, you know, you just kind of learn it along the way. So I think everybody has their different paths.
How do you balance polish with swag?
I just be myself.
Right.
That's my whole thing. It's like, only thing I know how to do is wake up in the morning as me and go to sleep as me. And I don't turn it on at all or off of anybody.
Yeah. A while back, we had a conversation with Tristan Walker,
uh-huh.
and we got on this thing because, you know, with Ben Horowitz is like the hip hop, you know, investor, yeah, yeah, whatever. Yeah. You know, did you feel like you ever, maybe not, maybe so, maybe not, needed to escape a moniker or a certain labeling or, you
for,
know?
For sure. Like for me, it's like, I think I hate the idea of people being put in boxes, you know, because I think, you know, even so, starting out in the music business, you know, pre-MTV, we used to have a thing called Friday Night Videos that used to come on like 11 o'clock Friday nights. But they showed, you know, it would be Run DMC, then it'll be Boy George and Culture Club. Mm-hmm. Then it'll be, you know, it just was Prince, Michael Jackson, Linda Ronstadt, Cyndi Lauper. Madonna, you named them. It's like we listen to all types of music.
Right.
So my musical background wasn't just hip hop. I loved hip hop, but I liked pop music. I like rock music. It was all types of music that we came up to kind of watching those shows. So when I got into the business, I hated the idea of being an urban manager. Like, you know, he's the guy that manages hip hop artists, or just, you know, he's supposed to manage black artists. So when I got into pop, it was very important to me to do a really great job at it, and to really go in and learn. And I called up, I sat down with guys like Guy Osiri, who had managed Madonna. I sat down with Paul McGinnis, who managed U2. I really became a student of the pop management game so I could really understand how it works, so I could break outside of that box. And I find Inventure, it's a lot of boxes there as well.
That's amazing, because it is kind of like, I always enjoy this game of conversion, right? Like when I walk into a room, I know there's a certain, I expect this from you. It's like the immediate recommendation is sometimes, we're working with this hip hop thing, or we're doing, and it becomes a fun game almost to like play this little, like, I'm also this, right? Yeah. I'm more diverse than, you know, you may recognize at this point in time. I don't know if like that's kind of, you know, the journey, like, is there a mechanism of you that like enjoys the hustle in that part of
You know what, it's the thing, I think I've always liked the element of surprise, you know, because people, they don't know what to expect from you when you walk in a room and you look a certain way or you're dressed a certain way, and I use it to my advantage,
right? So this, speaking of, you are always you when you wake up and you go to sleep, and there's this 24/7. And I think a lot of the things that I encounter are, at least that, you know, they have your name on them. Also just kind of ring true to who you are, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's your office, which, I mean, if people Google Adam Factory office online, it's amazing. I tried to get you like a little,
this feels good. I like the vibe.
It almost feels, it's like the poor man's version of your office.
I like the vibe.
It's like, that's not real leather, but it's, but no, like
pleather,
plenty of leather is what it stands for. What is your personal brand? And like, what do you like, you know, what is that essence that you want, because it feels cool, it's comfortable, it's just like the same way you speak is the same way things look, you know what I mean? There's a certain essence that carries out and extends beyond just this conversation with you.
No, you know what, I think, you know, going to the office, the whole idea around that was just, how do you build a place that makes people decompress, you know, when they walk into the door, you know? So literally probably a year's worth of thought went into how do we design this, you know? And for me, that's probably plays into, like, I want people to decompress when they're in the room with me. So I don't walk into the room with a big ego. Like, so I think, you know, a lot, especially in hip hop, you know, we went through this real, the stunner phase in hip hop.
Exactly.
When it was like, who had the biggest Maybach? Who had the most gold chains?
Right.
Who had the biggest plane? You know, all of those things or whatever.
So the stunting was, you didn't want to put diamonds in the windows.
Yeah, no. So the idea was for me, like I said before, I don't look at it as if I have a personal brand. I just show up. I try to put 100% into everything I do. Put my best foot forward. And I think ultimately when you plant those seeds, it ends up paying dividends in the long run.
That's great. When you think about it, is just being you. I think sometimes publicly, you know, and at least for a while, it was Troy Carter is Lady Gaga's manager, right? How did you come from up underneath that? Because I felt like for a long time,
probably
like,
when I got fired as being Lady Gaga's manager,
like, he is no longer Lady Gaga. What's he gonna do now? But I mean, you know, like even after that was gone, right? There was a huge Fast Company article. There was all this stuff, and it was, you know, I think for most people who are not, like, whether you're Harrison Ford and like that's Han Solo, no, I've done so much more other things.
No, you know what? It's like you always live with a label. I go at my kid's school, I'm Layla and Michael's dad. Like, you know, I don't have a name. I'm like Layla and Michael's dad, right? So and then I think in that case, you know, at that point in time, I think Gaga was probably, you know, the biggest star in the world. And so It's and a lot of people at that particular time and still now probably don't know who I am because I was behind the scenes. So to give people a reference point, they reference me as Lady Gaga's manager. I think I've been called worse things in my life. So,
that's true.
So I didn't mind. And I still don't mind if they refer as former manager, you know, cause she's definitely talented. But, I think with that being said, you know, because, you know, we've managed other artists or I've invested in companies and kind of done other things outside of that over the last few years, I think slowly but surely, you know, people have gotten beyond just that label. And, you know, hopefully I continue to do things well and make investments and, you know, hopefully they'll start referring to me as like the Uber investor.
Exactly.
Something. Give me something new, something big.
The Innovation Crush guest.
Yes. I'll take it.
Speaking of the, you know, things that you're involved in, can you give a quick list, not the whole list, but just like some of the things that are in the portfolio so people get a sense of, are you wearing Warby Parkers? Right?
Warby Parkers.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I just ordered some,
by the way. So
love it. I love it. Yeah. Warby Parkers. I got my Adam Factory shirt on right now. I'm loyal to the brand.
No, but just as far as like whatever's in the portfolio, maybe if you want to rattle off a couple of the companies and just put it into context.
What do we have? So we have,
don't worry, I'll stop you when the list gets too
Uber,
long.
We have Lyft, we have Dropbox, we have Spotify, we have Warby Parker, we have Slack, we have Thrive Market, we have Wish, we have Genius, formerly known as Rap Genius, Attention, which is a great media company that's down the street. We have Pop Chips, we have Stance Socks, what else?
I'm sure you don't have to go through the whole list.
Yeah,
but I wanted the audience.
We got Maven. Maven. Shout out to Deshaun from Maven.
What's Maven do?
So Maven, they sell beauty products aimed at African American females. So they found out 90% of African American hair salons don't carry an inventory because they couldn't afford inventory. So they literally built a mobile distribution.
How do you find
network.
That? Like this is one thing that always trips me out about entrepreneurs, that find out some random statistic.
No, I swear to God, I met Deshaun and was blown away. It's like young black guy from Oakland, moved to China, speaks fluent Mandarin, learned about the export business, bought shit back and start selling it out of the trunk of his car. Figured out this hole that was there in the hair salon business and built this app. You know, he's crushing it right now.
He's like Tyrese and Baby Boy, except a little bit more advanced.
But he speaks Mandarin.
Right, exactly.
He has a startup
and can code. That's it. There's only those three things. So you know, one of the things that it's always like the question that people wonder about, like, what's the it factor, right? Like, you know, what is the thing that you, the empathy is one piece of it, yeah. Like you as a customer.
But I think it's also as the financial opportunity, like, you know, so is there a real opportunity? And with Deshaun's business, we found out that the hair business alone in North America was a $9 billion business, you know, and here he was, and you look at this whole, like, what problem are you solving it and who are you solving it for? And how big is that opportunity? And are you the guy that's going to drive a Mack truck through a cul-de-sac to get it done?
Right.
You know, and you can sit in a room with people.
Violent.
Yeah. You know, but if you're Travis from Uber, you got to drive a lot of Mack trucks through cul-de-sacs.
That's true.
You know, if you're Neil and Dave from Warby Parker and you're up against Lazotica that tries to kill every piece of the competition, you know, so you gotta be a tough founder to really be able to go up against incumbents.
Right.
So we look for that sort of tenacity and, like, you know, do they have the wherewithal? Do they have the team? Do they have the people around them to help them get through those hard nights?
Because some of that stuff can be learned, or, you know, there's a lot of it is instinct, but some of it is like, hey, you need to do X. How much do you, you know, does Adam Factory take a role in sort of that mentor coach?
We're involved. We talk to our founders all the time. So, you know, you get to a point as companies grow, they need you less and less. But we're in it with the founders, you know, and I think I'm at a school where, you know, you got some people who think, you know, somebody just said, you know, you're born an entrepreneur, and you're not born an entrepreneur. I think it's something that you develop over a period of time. And then that grit is something that I think you just got to go through, through things in your life that kind of, toughens up that muscle in your stomach and your spirit to help you get through those tough times.
Right. So a lot of wiping tears of your
Founders. Oh yeah.
No, I can imagine like.
Yeah. You know what? It's, I don't know one founder who doesn't have those, you know, night sweats,
right.
You're up at night when you got to worry about things that founders have to worry about, whether it's customers, whether it's your board, whether it's payroll, whether it's revenue, whether it's competitors. You know, we're talking about, you know, the threats on your existence, you know,
right.
And, you know, so those are things that gets knots in your stomachs. And so when you make it through that first trial, and then all of a sudden, you know, you made it through, it gives you confidence when you go through it that second time. And as any entrepreneur, you're going to go through it constantly throughout your career, but you know, your gut gets toughened.
It's like once you survive the first hurdle, you're like, all right, there's going to be some more hurdles, yep. But I can probably clear them.
Yeah.
What was Troy Carter's first hurdle? What was the one thing you're like, oh shit, that was, I didn't like that.
Shit, life.
Life in general.
Yeah, no, you know what, it's no secret. You know, we come from West Philly. In our neighborhood, you went to sleep the gunshots, you know, mm-hmm. regularly. So, you know, it was things growing up that you just had to be tough. Right. You know, so it went and not tough in a way of I'm going to get into fights everywhere I go tough.
Right.
But tough in a way that you got to survive around certain people. You got to be able to survive in certain rooms. You got to be able to know how to navigate a room.
Yeah.
When the bully comes around or the guy comes around and you know that
shoot check.
He got a gun. You better have
right.
You got to know how to talk to that guy in a certain type of way. And luckily enough, I was blessed enough to, you know, growing up in Philly during the 80s, mid 80s specifically was, you know, during crack epidemic when you had, you know, the JBM, which was the Junior Black Mafia. You had the Shower Posse, which was, you know, the Jamaican Mafia. And, you know, you had kids getting killed in the street left and right every single day, you know, and I got lucky enough where the drug dealers and people in my neighborhood saw more in me and basically just gave me a pass. And, you know, those guys became like my big brothers and god cousins and god brothers. And, you know, and they helped me get through it. So I wasn't a guy. So they, even when I wanted to do bad stuff,
right.
You know, they wouldn't let me. You know, so they saw potential in me. So, I just was blessed to have, you know, grace on my side.
That's amazing, though. I feel like that's a side of the story that doesn't always get told, mm-hmm. right? Especially like when you hear about Chicago mm-hmm. and, you know, or like all the flack that went around the Chirac film and,
yeah.
and all these things, you know, you don't hear that story enough of the, like of the hood taking care of its own.
Well, it was a different time. You know, I think back then, if you were an athlete or you went to church or, you know, you had certain things, you got a pass for
it. Only those two things.
I played
football for the church. That's yeah. what I was covering.
So you're
on,
good. You're covered on both sides. So you get a pass. And nowadays though, you know, if your parents move on a certain block in Chicago, you're in the gang.
Right.
If you know, if they move two blocks away, you're in a different gang. So if it doesn't matter. You could be an athlete, you could be a singer, you could be gifted, but you know, you're in that gang if you're in Chicago. And I think back where when I grew up, just different rules applied. And I think we've seen it change.
Are you involved in any way, you know, now that you're grown and, you know, successful in like giving back? And if so, how?
Yeah, I work with a couple of organizations. So,
I'll say giving. I won't say giving back. That's
yeah, you know.
I always reframe that.
No, it's funny you said a good friend of mine, Mark Bradford, who's a fantastic.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah, Mark's fantastic. he's a fine artist. And Mark came up in Leimert Park and we were doing an interview in Leimert Park. And he said, I don't think of it as giving back. I think of it as sharing. And how do you share? So, you know, we do things, you know, a lot of stuff locally in LA. So, I'm on the board of actually with Mark called Art in Practice, where, you know, it's kind of built around taking care of foster kids. I work with Nifty on young entrepreneurship programs, so Black and Latino kids. We do a bunch of stuff with Urban TXT that's focused on STEM training and coding for Black and Latino kids. So, you know, a lot of work with kids that are disadvantaged, that, you know, right, come from similar circumstances.
I do a lot of work with white kids.
Okay. So. Me too, by the way. I've invested in a bunch too.
I don't know where that came from. So sticking with childhood for a second, Wikipedia says your father's one of your greatest heroes. Mm-hmm. Can you tell that story and just explain a little bit about why?
Yeah, you know, I think my dad, I guess what Chris is referring to, it was a story that came out, which was crazy, because I was doing this interview in Philadelphia for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and it was one of the first pieces where I really let somebody in, and I did it because it was like my local town, and like, you know, I just felt like, okay, if I'm gonna tell my full story and give somebody access, I'd rather be a hometown paper.
Right.
And the reporter spent like 3 or 4 days with me. And at the fourth day, he said, okay, you talked a lot about your mom and your grandmother growing up or whatever. But you never said anything, you didn't say much about your dad or whatever. Where was your dad? And I just told him, I said, look, I said, my dad was in prison, you know, from the time I was probably about 7 until I was older. And he was arrested for murder, got into an issue with his brother-in-law, and his brother-in-law ended up killing his brother-in-law and went to jail for 12 and a half, 13 years. And,
how old were you at the time?
I was about 6 when it happened, about 6 years old when it happened. And I did the interview and I didn't think anything of it, but I didn't give my dad the heads up on it. And I just assumed that this was a story that people in my family knew, and everybody in my family didn't know the story. Like some of the younger people in my family, they didn't know the story. And my dad called me up and we talked about it because he was upset that I said it. And I didn't want to lie to the reporter. It was information I felt like could have been found out. So I just wanted to be, I wanted to be transparent about it, but I felt terrible that I didn't give them the heads up on it. And I had no clue it was people in my family that didn't know about it or right, whatever. But what we talked about is, how do we use this as an opportunity? Because my dad, so the part of the story that, you know, we didn't talk about is that my dad was a social worker when this happened, ended up, he and his wife stayed together the whole time. My stepmother stayed together the entire time he was in prison. When he got out,
that's the best woman ever, by the way.
Oh no, my stepmother, I swear to God, the women in my life, man, are just fantastic. And, but she rode with him throughout the entire experience. When he got out, ended up getting a job as a driver, driving a woman in the suburbs. And then 2 years later, got his old job back as a social worker and retired as a social worker.
Wow.
Came back as the patriarch of our family. So like, and people know, you know, with my dad, if any, like, he's the guy that everybody in the family goes to when you got a serious issue. How do you talk through something? Like, whether it's a relationship issue, whether it's a life issue, you know, he's just one of those guys. And, you know, Vietnam War vet, you know, he's just a real deal. So I love him to death. And his experience, I don't think I think his experience helped shape who I am, how I approach things, how I deal with conflict, how I deal with success. So I've been blessed to have great, great parents.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So now as a parent of five children yourself.
Yes, we got a tribe. We got a crew.
It's a lot of bedroom time. I only
and
have
a lot of tuition.
Oh, man. Don't even start. You know, what is the, if you could point out a single most thing that you feel is most important to instilling your kids as a parent?
Gratitude, you know, if it's one thing, it's just gratitude, you know, it's just not taking anything for granted. My kid, you know, my kids grew up much different than I grew up. And how do you not take it for granted? How do you feel? How do you walk in a room feeling like you got to work for something versus you're entitled to it? You know, I think there should be in any kid it should be a small dose of entitlement, because you should have the opportunity that anybody should have, but you got to work for that, you know, for that opportunity.
That's great. So a little bit of a fast forward to now, you know, and your career has definitely empowered not only the businesses that you've helped along the way, but also those customers, right? The Uber, the convenience of an Uber ride, the easy listening of a Spotify. What do you want your legacy to be? Like, you know what I mean? After you're done, if you ever stop, you know, what do you want people to look back and think of and remember about Troy, or what's the impact you want to have?
You know, I didn't start. I don't know if I'm thinking about legacy right now. You know, it's important to me that I create a pathway for kids who come from where I come from to be able to get there, because it was people like Russell Simmons, who the founder of Def Jam and Rush and All Def Digital. It was people like Reginald Lewis, who was like the Jackie Robinson of Wall Street. You know, there are people who I modeled myself after, who I looked at and said, okay, you know what? If they can do it, you know, I can do it. Like, you know, they literally, Reginald Lewis was from Baltimore, grew up in, you know, a crazy neighborhood in Baltimore. Yep. Russell was from Queens, looking at Puffy being from Harlem, you know, and it was people that kind of, I felt like paved the way for me. So if I can, I'm just looking to blast open the door, and if I can be the doorstop, just let me right. be the doorstop to let, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids in the door.
You can be like Forrest Whitaker in The Butler.
Cookie? Yeah. Hey, listen, I'll hold the tray.
Cookie?
If I can let them in, you know, because it's funny, because I was literally, it was a piece that blew my mind. It was we had been raising this technology fund, one investor who's probably just an incredible investor, you know, he came to me and he said, he basically pulled us to the side and said, I want you to know that people didn't, there's some investors that wouldn't invest in your fund because you were focused. They thought you were going to only focus on, Black founders. Like, you were going to change right. your strategy and only focus on minority founders. And, you know, and they wanted you to focus on more Ubers and Lyfts and Dropboxes and, you know, these billion-dollar companies. And I said, who said a Black guy can't build a billion-dollar company? Like, it's like, but, right. and it just blew my mind. And literally, it fucked me up for the entire weekend thinking about it. And I'm like, by the way, Black people, weren't allowed to play basketball at one point. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
They weren't allowed to play basketball, and now you know it's a multi-billion-dollar business built on that, right? And I think being able to open up technology to be able to give minority entrepreneurs a chance is like It's my obligation. I don't have a choice. And based off of that conversation that that I had with this guy the other day, I'm like, I'm seeking out founders. Matter of fact, on your show, Innovation Crush right now, every black dope founder out there, send it. Send me your business plan. Send it. Send it. We need it. We need it. We got to prove these guys wrong. There are multi-billion dollar opportunities out there. Let's find them and let's get it. And you guys build the next Uber. You guys build the next Dropbox. Show these guys they're wrong.
What are you passionate about?
That. that right there. That right there.
I felt it.
Yeah.
No, it's true. But I've had that conversation in the last month.
I just hate race. Like it's this whole bullshit around. I'm glad this is that I can talk honestly with you. But it's this whole thing around unconscious bias that they're using. And that's what they're calling it. It's called racism where we come from. They call it unconscious right. bias. They try to clean it up. And it's called racism at the end of the day. And, you know, I feel like we were born in a country where everybody should be afforded an opportunity. And the fact that gender, geography, zip code, race, religion, like all of these things. The fact that we live in America is like this. These are the issues to me that are important right now. So I just think, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a founder, as a leader in the tech community, you know, I feel like we got to be vocal. We got to be vocal about it. And what I love is it's not just black guys being vocal about it. It's guys like Bill Maris from Google Ventures. It's guys like Mark Suster from Upfront mm-hmm. Ventures. It's Paige Craig from Arena. You know, so it's Fred Wilson from Battery. You know, Frida and Mitch Kapoor. From Kapoor Capital.
Love them.
So, you know, is a group of people who are angry about it. And we're like, okay, we're not protesting it. We don't need to protest in the streets. We need to protest with our checkbooks at
just
this point.
Just do it. And that's a very unique position to be in mm-hmm. to say like, okay, I don't have to go and like hold a sign and, mm-hmm. and you know, meet with people, except for the people that I want to support and fund and do the exact thing yes. that we have the problem.
And then now with that being said, founders who are given this opportunity, they got to show and prove now. They got to show up and they got to prove.
Yes, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You said a lot of really amazing things.
And no, by the way, it's the way people we live in a world where it's follow the pack. If a superhero movie comes out and does $1 billion at the box office, Every studio is going to make superhero movies. You know what I'm saying? If a black founder creates the next Facebook or Google, everybody's going to be looking for that next guy. It's just a follow the pack mentality.
Right.
So we just need one to break it wide open. And I think it goes from there.
And I think it's also telling those stories, right? Mm-hmm. You, Tristan Walk, like all these individuals who are chameleonaire, you know,
yeah. I just met, by the way, like, last week, and he blew my mind.
Guest on the show.
Chameleonaire to me is he's a special founder.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, okay. And just cool and fun. Like he's like all the boxes are checked yep. with him.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's also telling more of those stories, right? I'm 120 episodes into this. Like I tell the
wow.
whole diaspora of just individuals who are creative and smart, but I make sure I'm like being inclusive, mm-hmm, as mm-hmm. inclusive as possible. Things last year, you guys launched Smashed, right?
Yes.
Which given your passion at this point, Smashed is a perfect word. It's like
yeah,
just smashing the game.
No, you know what? Cause it's funny because we had all of these like really great people that would come in and out of our offices and had these interesting conversations. And I'm like, we need a platform to kind of promote it, but it needs to feel like Forbes meets Fader. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
So who's telling the story through the cultural lens? So the whole idea was let's launch this platform.
And Smashed, you know, outside of the publication, if you guys like S-M-A-S-H apostrophe D.
No, just S-M-A-S-H-D.
No apostrophe.
See,
it's all this hip hop stuff, man. I there's no Z in there.
No, exactly.
Is there a Z or dollar sign?
dollar sign.
I keep thinking of Master P album covers now. Exactly. That's all like that whole era. But as a platform, which is a perfect word to describe it, you know, you've launched Smash Labs. Right. Mm-hmm. There's a conference coming up. Yeah. It was all smashed. Right. It's a sub brand of Atom Factory. Talk a little bit about just the Smash brand outside of the publication and even the fact that you decided to create an accelerator, you know, when you could what's the difference between doing what you've normally been doing and then saying, all right, I'm going to bring all these people here for a number of weeks and put a program together.
I think the accelerator program that's called Smash Labs. The idea was
No apostrophe.
Okay. just Smash Labs.
Exactly.
But the idea around it was, you know, it came from, we had one company that I met at USC and they pitched me their business. I said, I have some extra space in my office, which was my gym, which was the most underutilized space in the entire building. Nobody used the gym. So literally we moved out all of the equipment, ripped down the mirrors, put up a fresh coat of paint, and we put this company in there and we just gave them access to our network. And they built a $3 million business within a matter of 10 or 11 months being in the space and just kind of really benefiting from our core expertise around branding, marketing, communications, a lot of our relationships. And when they moved out of the space, we had this, they outgrew, they went from four people to 30 employees. And I decided to, you know, let's do it again. But if we could build it out and as a program and let's bring in more companies and, you know, let's bring in, let's really organize it in a way that was complementary to other accelerators. So where and we had an incredible first cohort of companies that came through, and we're opening up I think April 25th for our new batch that will start in the fall. So
and just by the way, I mean that portfolio was pretty amazing because you had very new and young companies, but then you had, I don't know if I can say, but I'm gonna do it anyway. But we transfers of the world were also in there who were like huge in Europe, not as big in the US, but we all sort of use it and send files, which is very like a mechanical sort of undertaking for you versus something that might be a little bit more sexy and like the music, you know, or entertainment.
The thing is, you know, we wanted companies that touch culture. That was the whole idea, you know, so where it wasn't companies that were primarily focused on music or, you know, it was how do we look at companies that touch culture, but build an environment where the companies can also learn from each other. And so with WeTransfer, you know, I think they did over 1 billion transfers last year. Incredibly creative founders, killing it in Europe. They were looking to expand and grow in North America and really create, you know, how do we launch a media platform on top of this layer? And we hit it off right away.
Right.
But to be able to have that experience of a WeTransfer in there with a young company pre-product like TrackFire, it was a mutual benefit from them working together because WeTransfer wanted to really learn about music discovery. Mm. And TrackFire really needed product experts, and they that was a match made in heaven right there. So it was a lot of synergy amongst the portfolio.
How do you give these young companies, you know, the expertise of someone as seasoned as yourself or as seasoned as any of the mentors that you've mentioned? Because there's definitely the grit and the hustle and all the things that come with being, you know, a millennial or younger founder of X. Mm-hmm. But the life experience and, you know, the things, the value that has that may go overlooked, you know, along the journey.
Yeah, you know what? The companies had the benefit of our network, which was fantastic. So, you know, Mark Cuban kicked it off. So literally the first talk of the entire thing was Mark Cuban, who is probably just one of the best entrepreneurs in the world. Incredibly smart. You know, it's one of those guys who's seen it all. And has made some incredible investments, But then you had Jason Calacanis, you know, who's probably one of the top angel investors in the world, talking to him and, you know, come in and spend the day. Then you got Russell Simmons, and then you got, you know, the team from HBO from Game of Thrones, and, you know, that talked about storytelling and the importance of narrative, and Rochelle Parham from eBay, who taught people about marketplace. So things that I don't know about, and areas that I can't reach, to be able to go into our network to bring them in, you know, I think that probably was even more beneficial than me, than anything that they've could have gotten from me alone.
If I'm a marketer and I'm at, let's call it Pepsi or some big brand right now, and I'm listening,
that means you're in trouble.
Which is what I was about to say. Which, like, if I'm that individual and I need to take away something from this conversation, you know, what do you want the big brands to know outside of watch out? Like, you know, what is it that you do, and like what Adam Factory does, that they should be thinking about or benefiting from?
That's the difference between, you know, founder-led organizations. You know, so when you look at Amazon and you look at Google, you look at Apple during the Jobs era. These were founders and publicly traded companies that didn't give a fuck about what the public thought. Like, this was about, we are product-driven companies. We care about the consumer. We know what's coming next. We don't mind removing the disk drive from the computer while everybody's, you know, using disk. We don't mind building Amazon Web Services and we're in the book business. You know, we don't mind breaking the company up and calling it Alphabet and, you know, doing a venture arm and doing, Google X with driverless cars. These are companies that are looking at the future and not concentrating on how are we surviving quarter to quarter. That's not, that is like, they couldn't care less about it. Fast forward to, you know, companies like what we're talking about. If you're still building your business off of carbonated beverages, you are in trouble, because it's no coincidence that the soda category that had grown for 100 years fell off a cliff and started eroding when the information age hit. So when people can read on the back of a bottle and see a direct correlation between health issues and ingredients, and now all of a sudden you have these other options, you know, I respect CVS for saying, okay, you know what? We're getting rid of a $2 billion tobacco business because we're focused on healthcare. We're going to take the hit in the market right now. We're going to take the financial hit at the register. But if we're going to call ourselves a health organization, we got to move out of, you know, right. We got to move towards the future. And I can't imagine a future in 50 years where cigarette companies are going to be able to survive in their current state of where they are right now. And I think it goes the same for sodas probably too.
That's great. You know, I think when, especially on this show or just in general, you read a headline, it's Joe or Jill at X company does such and such, or all those visionaries you just mentioned who came in and spoke to, you know, your first class of entrepreneurs and businesses. Rarely do we hear about the team behind that individual. Tell us a little bit about your team, how you put it together, especially, you know, especially like coming from a team of seven and preserving the essence of like who you are and instilling that in other individuals, you know. And I don't even know what size Adam.
I think it's 20 people at Adam Factory across all divisions now. And what's funny is maybe about 2 years ago, I realized that, the team, because the original, you know, Gaga was our first client at Adam Factory. So I had sold the company, created this new company. Gaga was the first client that we signed to the new company. And the new company was only me. So it literally, not even an assistant at that time. It was literally me. And then, you know, I hired an assistant. Then, you know, the business grew a little bit, like Gaga started touring. So I
wasn't going to call you Laddie Gaga, but then it's too late. Yeah. B, it wasn't that funny.
Yeah.
So
we'll edit that out. but we had to build the business around her. So when we stopped working with Gaga, I realized that the business was designed around that one specific client and didn't really scale to representing other types of clients or moving into other areas. So I went through a period of really turning the company upside down. So that's probably...
And it was still you at this point.
Yeah, well, it was... I think we had grown the company to probably 40 employees at our biggest, and which I felt like it was too big, and I had, you know, too many direct reports. A lot of bureaucracy had grown within the business, and I like people to be able to make independent decisions, you know. So, and it weighs me down when I got 50 people that are waiting for an answer directly from me, or feel like that they can't make a move because it's somebody in between them and a quick decision.
Right.
So I really did a complete reorg, and we're about 20 people, and it's very, very, very lean and inefficient.
How do you empower people to, cause I can imagine when you hire someone, right? Mm-hmm. There's a growth period where it's like, is this okay? Like, how much rope are you giving at the beginning, and how closely are you tied to
you know, process? I don't think anybody in the organization by myself can make a decision that's going to put the company out of business. So short of that. And one thing, Doug Moore is the CEO of Sony Music. He was the head of Universal. And at that time, he had Jimmy Iovine, who ran Interscope, reporting to him. He had L.A. Reid, who was running Def Jam, reporting to him. Lior Cohen, who was running the label, reporting to him. So he probably had 8 superstar executives that reported to him. So I asked Doug, I said, how do you manage that? Like, how do you manage that executive talent? And he said, judge people by their intent. So when people make a mistake, look at their intent in that decision. If it was intended to be beneficial to the company, then they let them make that mistake and learn from that mistake. As long as it wasn't malicious. Right. And that's how I look at it. You know, I tell people, take risk. Take the risk. Don't wait on me. Like, if you want to sign that act and you really believe in that act, my COO, who's been with me since the very beginning, you know, she has a law background, came to me about a year and a half ago, and said, I want to sign my first client. And she's strictly operations, right, by the way. So I said, okay, who's the client? She said he's a jazz artist, a jazz saxophonist. And I'm like, in my mind, I said, good luck. But I encouraged her. I said, if you believe in him and you want to sign him, go for it. Fast forward, it's Kamasi Washington, who, you know, worked on the Kendrick Lamar album.
That's amazing.
Album of the year from probably 50 different press sources. Ended up winning the most prestigious prize in America, I think it's called the American Music Prize or something. That's equivalent to the Mercury Award in the UK.
I know.
Yeah, it's like the best thing, right? You're lying because this is the first year. But to be able to encourage her and support her during a decision that I didn't necessarily believe in, but I believed in her. He's playing Coachella in a couple of weeks. He's like playing Newport Jazz Festival. He's the real deal.
It's amazing. So as we wind down, mm-hmm. breathe it all in. Whew. That was the quickest deep breath ever. Do you meditate?
All the time.
So the show is called Innovation Crush.
Uh-huh.
What do you see out in the world right now? Obviously, you have a good 30,000-foot view of what's happening that you are currently crushing on. Like, what's the one thing that Troy Carter wishes he would come a little closer to him?
Right now, I think country music's very interesting on the music side. Very, very, very interesting. It probably has the biggest growth opportunity right now out of music just globally. And then also I think it's speaking to people in a way that hip hop used to speak to people and the way that soul music used to speak to people. And so it's really, and so country music's is a very interesting space right now. And then on the technology side, you know, just really this entire, we see the shift in democratizing healthy lifestyles right now. So like I mentioned, Thrive Market, they're kind of focused on, they're going after Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, mm-hmm. but it's like 50% below the price. And, but it's a membership that you pay every year, like $60, like Costco.
Right.
But you know, for every membership that somebody buys, they're giving away a membership to, people that live in food deserts. Right. So where, you know, it's
brilliant.
It's brilliant. Yeah. And I love it, you know? So, I'm like, those are things that are very, very interesting to today.
Well, with all the, I mean, wow, we covered a lot. Wish we could keep going, but, with that, I mean, with covering your childhood, how you came up, the grit that you have in you, the entrepreneurial endeavors, and just, you know, your creative vision on how you see business and opportunity, mm-hmm. Complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is.
Wow. Innovation to me is living around the corner.
What does that mean?
Living around the corner is like you're there before everybody else gets there. You're seeing what's happening before everybody else sees it.
Very, very Philadelphia of you.
Yes.
Last but not least, how do people find you? You know, put yourself on. No, just kidding. Where do people go to find out more about you, Adam Factory?
Yeah, just go to AdamFactory.com is our platform. CrossCultureVC.com is how to reach us for investments. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
All right. Cool. No, thanks for having me. No, we got to do this again.
I'm down for part two.
Let's do it.
Hey, everybody. This has been another install. Don't look at me funny this time. This has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.
All right, bro.